This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Protocol for Life Balance, offering a wide range of professional-grade products using ingredients backed by strong scientific research. Among them, several stand out, which can help keep your blood vessels healthy and your circulatory system working properly, including Protocol's unique soy-free form of vitamin K2 that has been shown to promote healthy vascular structures, and D3, which helps maintain healthy blood levels of calcium. They're available in several forms and dosages, including a new combined formulation, which harnesses the synergistic effects of both K2 and D3. They're backed by solid scientific data. And available now at drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance. That's drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance for more information and to order. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today we're talking to Dr. Georgia Eade, a Harvard-trained board-certified psychiatrist specializing in nutritional and metabolic psychiatry. And she is the recent author of an article that came out a couple of months ago entitled Nutrition Can Strengthen the Immune System to Fight COVID-19. It appeared in Psychology Today. Dietary changes can help bolster your natural immunity against viruses. Oh, that's even more heretical than stating that diet matters when it comes to your mood. now we're entering some real treacherous waters here because, lay out your argument about how diet impacts the risk of severe COVID-19.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is not my work. This is the work of scientists around the world who have been studying viruses, the immune system, and metabolism, of course, for a long time. And I thank them for all their hard work. But as I think many of your listeners know, the people who are at highest risk for COVID-related hospitalizations and death, far higher risk, are, you know, people who have high blood pressure and or type 2 diabetes, and if they have obesity, if excess body fat is also a risk factor for this condition. So those three things may not seem connected, but they're often simply different tentacles of the same beast, which is insulin resistance, you know, high insulin levels, or what's called sometimes prediabetes. And unfortunately, many of us now have prediabetes, you know, silently high insulin levels because we're not eating properly.
Even sometimes without the overt manifestations of extreme overweight. And we sometimes refer to this as TOFI, thin outside, fat inside. So in other words, metabolically unfit without the obvious external signs.
Thank you very much for making that point, because you can be thin and still have high insulin levels and an unhealthy metabolism. And, you know, most people don't fall into that category, but there are enough of those people where you really can't, you can even be an extremely fit athlete. You can be an elite athlete and still have prediabetes or even diabetes and not be aware of it. So, simply exercising or keeping your weight in a so-called healthy range is not necessarily enough information for you to rest assured that you're metabolically healthy. The only way you can really know, and there's very simple ways, but for example, you can measure your blood sugar at home, and a continuous glucose monitor is a game changer. If you can access a continuous glucose monitor even for a couple of weeks, you can see what's happening to your blood sugar throughout the day and night in response to your chosen diet. Or you can look at your cholesterol panel and take your triglyceride to HDL ratio and see if you can understand whether if your triglyceride to HDL ratio is well below 2, then that's a good sign. But I think it's hard, you know, to talk about obesity as a risk factor for COVID-19 because it may edge into that uncomfortable territory of people feeling as though it's about body image and body shape and
stigma.
Body shaming. Stigma has nothing to do with this. I mean, being overweight is just a clue to poor metabolic health. It isn't necessarily in and of itself the problem. It's just a clue that something may be wrong metabolically. And so I think that There's been some lovely research showing really clearly how people who have insulin resistance, they are much more susceptible to COVID-19 if you have high blood pressure. Then that's another sign. So how are those connected? So people with insulin resistance tend to have abnormally low levels of ACE2, which is a cell surface enzyme that's responsible for keeping blood sugar in a healthy range and protecting your lung cells from injury. But COVID-19 ties up those ACE2 molecules because it needs the ACE2 to enter the cells. So it ties up those ACE2 molecules. So people with insulin resistance who are infected with COVID-19, they have even fewer of these ACE2 enzymes available to keep blood pressure and lung damage under control than they normally would. So they're more vulnerable. And people with blood sugar that's running too high, respiratory viruses are particularly vicious in people who have high blood sugar levels. And it's been shown in studies that high blood sugar levels can encourage viruses to multiply faster. Mm-hmm. And that people with insulin resistance, not just even type 2 diabetes, but just insulin resistance itself, or what's called prediabetes, they respond more sluggishly and abnormally to respiratory virus infections. And it can take at least a week before your body can begin mounting a defense if you've got insulin resistance. So your immune system is not on its toes. It's almost asleep at the wheel. And that gives the virus a huge running start to be able to multiply and make people much more gravely ill than if their immune system were healthy.
And of course, low carbohydrate diets have been shown to lower blood pressure and improve blood sugar. Unfortunately, you know, there's sort of a paradoxical situation. At the very same time that we're trying to combat COVID with vaccines and social distancing and masks and lockdown, more and more people have gained weight. More and more people are indulging in snacks and comfort foods and DoorDash. The only people out in the streets are the delivery people bringing delicious morsels. We know that eating out is a risk factor for metabolic syndrome. The more meals you eat out, I mean, statistically, it's been shown the more likely you are to develop metabolic derangements. But now these messengers of various kinds make it real easy to get restaurant food just with an app. So, we got kind of a collateral damage of COVID-19. Our population is being rendered even more vulnerable.
It's so true. And I think that one of the hopeful things, this can all sound like gloom and doom, but one of the really important things about your listeners' understanding about the connection between weight, being overweight or having excess body fat and COVID-19 is you don't need to lose all that weight to reduce your risk, because losing weight takes a long time and it's very difficult. It's easier with certain types of diets, particularly low carbohydrate diets, and very helpful, but you don't have to lose weight to reduce your risk. All you have to do is get your blood sugar and insulin levels down, and that just takes a matter of weeks. And so, and then you can let the weight loss take its time. And I think that's really important for people to know, because if you've gained quite a bit of weight during COVID, or if you've always had a weight problem, and I grew up with a weight problem, I know how hard it is, and I still, it's always been a challenge for me my whole life. I know how hard it is. But the good news is you don't have to solve that problem to reduce your risk for not just COVID-19, but all kinds of infections, and I'm sure more viruses are coming down the pike. So I think that's a really hopeful and empowering message for people, is you don't have to fix the problem entirely. You just need to start working towards a healthier metabolism.
And being somewhat overweight is not necessarily a sign that you're metabolically impaired, because there's some paradoxes here. There's some people who look ostensibly thin, and yet they're metabolically deranged or impaired. And other people who seem a little on the chunky side, but they're metabolically fit. So weight per se is not the sine qua non of risk.
That's absolutely right. And that's why it's helpful to look beneath the surface, right? So what's going on with your blood sugar? You know, what's happening in between meals? What does your metabolism look like on the inside? And I think that if more people would check, if more people would either ask their doctor or their clinician to check, or if they check at home, most people now have access to even a simple finger stick meter, because diabetes is so common now. Even if you don't own a blood sugar meter yourself, you could probably borrow one from someone else in your family and just measure your blood sugar before and after, 1 hour after you eat, and see what's happening to it. Is it going up too high? Is it going to 140 milligrams per deciliter or higher? And that's a big red flag that however you're eating now is not safe for your metabolism, and that some changes should be made that could really help you feel better and protect you from not just COVID-19, but all kinds of health problems. So yeah, we can't judge a book by its cover.
Indeed. So on the ketogenic diet, can you describe what that looks like for people? I mean, this is more the very committed low-carb diet. I mean, in fact, perhaps we should start with a definition of what's the difference between a low-carb diet and a ketogenic diet, because I think there's some confusion about those terms.
Thank you for asking. That is the question. There's so much confusion about that. There are different definitions of ketogenic diet. And so my definition of a ketogenic diet is any way of eating that lowers insulin levels enough to turn on fat burning and generate clinically meaningful levels of ketones in the blood. So now low carb is the most common way to do that. And I would argue the kind of safest and easiest way to do that, most comfortable way to do that. But you can also do that using strict intermittent fasting protocols. You can even do it by eating a high carbohydrate diet if it's extremely low in calories. So below 800 calories a day is what's required. And so people tend to get hungry on diets that are extremely low calorie. When you're eating that way, it can be hard to get all the nutrients you need, but you can do it. So another point of common confusion is it doesn't have to have meat in it. You can do this as a vegetarian. You can do this eating a Mediterranean diet. You can do this, eating a plant-based diet, vegan diet. What's important is changing the amount of carbohydrate that you're eating if you want to eat a ketogenic diet. So when the insulin levels come down low enough, then your fat burning enzymes will turn on and ketones will be released into the blood.
Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this vital message with you. There's never been a more important time to ensure your immune system is operating at its peak. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a new natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals, created exclusively to help promote a better immune response. Elderberry with zinc and echinacea. Future Farm's elderberry with zinc and echinacea is the first to combine these three powerful ingredients together. Elderberry is packed with antioxidants, vitamins, and may boost your immune system. Echinacea has been shown to activate chemicals in the body that decrease inflammation, and zinc activates T lymphocytes. Low zinc has been associated with increased susceptibility. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216. That's 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Elderberry with zinc and echinacea is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And with excellent guests like today's guest, Dr. Georgia Ead. So switching gears slightly, I mean, as a nutritionally oriented psychiatrist, do you favor the use of nutritional supplements? Quite a few have been touted for their mood benefits. Do you have any favorites?
I don't use a lot of supplements in my practice, although I will say that most of my patients take many, many supplements. Most of my patients come to me taking a lot of supplements, and some of them, you know, 2 to 3 pages of supplements. and so it's a compelling notion this sort of it's natural human, it's sort of human nature to want to resolve a problem by adding something to the diet rather than taking something away. So, you know, the idea, it's a really compelling idea that all I have to do is add this extract or this, you know, this antioxidant or this, this supplement, this superfood, and, I'll be healthier. And the truth is that that's rarely the case. It's really more the power of subtraction where you're going to get the most bang for your buck, which is taking the things out of the diet that are damaging the brain and the metabolism in the first place. And so taking the foods out of the diet that are causing that excess oxidation rather than taking in antioxidant supplements, most of which don't work in the human body anyway. So that's my philosophy. It's not that all supplements certain supplements can be very, very helpful. Particularly essential nutrients, things like vitamin B12 can be really important for people on a plant-based diet or who can't absorb B12 naturally from food. Or omega-3 supplements can be very helpful in certain cases. And so their nutrient supplements can be very important. But I don't use a lot of other types of supplements in my practice on a regular basis.
Okay. Well, what does a typical day look like for somebody on a ketogenic diet? Is there a lot of deprivation involved, or, you know, can you have a variety of foods?
It really depends on how you, there are many, many different ways that you can construct the diet based on your dietary preferences, and also your goals. But all you really need to do, and the only foods you really need to give up, and these, it's difficult. I will say it's psychologically difficult. And for the first week or two, it can even be physically challenging. You can go through some withdrawal.
Yeah.
Yeah. From a very high carbohydrate diet. So you, of course, all the sweets, all the foods that are taste sweet and that have high starch or high sugar content, including things that we often think of as healthy, like fruits and starchy vegetables, most of those will need to go. Cereals, fruit juice, potatoes, all those sorts of things will need to go. Oatmeal and grains and other sorts of things. But the good news is what gets to stay is some things that some people have felt deprived of for a long time, such as, you know, fatty animal foods, you know, chicken with the roasted skin and higher fat animal foods, beef that's higher in fat rather than lean. Those types of foods, you don't need to worry about those. Those are the safest possible foods you could eat for your metabolism. And you get to include as many low carbohydrate vegetables, as you like. You don't need to remove any of the low carbohydrate vegetables unless you want to. So it's really just a healthy whole foods diet. It's really what I like to advocate for my patients as a starting point is a low carbohydrate sort of paleo style diet. So it's got, you know, animal foods as well as, you know, nut, you know, so things like, you know, meat, seafood, poultry, eggs, nuts, non-starchy vegetables. And you can even throw in a few berries here and there if you want to taste something sweet. But it's the kind of diet that we would have recognized a long, long time ago. Where there's nothing, you know, there's nothing that came out of a factory. They're just whole foods. And when people say, well, what is a whole food? You know, basically a whole food consists of a single ingredient. It can be found in nature and it's perishable. It's really that simple. Any child could follow that plan.
Are you a little dismayed at the proliferation of keto food products, you know, that you now find lining the aisles of health food stores and, you know, Whole Foods supermarkets, because they're really jumping on the bandwagon, developing all kinds of keto products.
I know it is disheartening. It really is human nature, with a combination of us wanting to replace junk food with something else, sort of healthier types of junk food, you know, bars and beverages and things like that, because we're so accustomed to eating processed food, we miss it if it's gone and we think it needs to be replaced. And it's the other part of human nature is, you know, wanting to, make money. And these products are very, very profitable. So because people are looking for them, and again, as replacements for the foods they recognize. And I mean, having a treat from time to time or a substitute food can be important and helpful, but it shouldn't be the foundation of the strategy. And I think ideally what works well for people is if they practice eating simply whole foods and gradually work their way away from expensive processed factory foods. Some of these foods are really, they're not necessarily that much healthier for you than alternatives. And so often they have sweeteners in them, which continue they keep your palate interested mm-hmm. in sweet.
So-called natural sweeteners, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, they can be helpful to a small extent, but they, for some people, they continue the craving for things that are sweet, and they don't let your taste buds adjust to being able to taste the natural sweetness in whole foods. And so I think that can be an issue for some people. But for the other thing about these processed unnatural foods, like things like bars and shakes, is that for people with food addiction, which is a huge number of people, it makes it really hard for people not to overeat. Because those types of foods, which are highly processed, they don't trigger the same stop signs in the body that a whole food does. Mm-hmm. You know, things.
They're ultra palatable. They're designed to be ultra palatable and delicious, and you know, hence they're consumed readily and in excess.
That's an excellent, excellent point. That point of hyperpalatability, and I'm really, really glad you brought that up, because I don't think many of us realize how much of a slave we are to these intense flavors, which are not found in combination in nature. And once you step off that, once you step away from those foods, it doesn't take long for you to appreciate the subtle and amazing flavors of real food. But if you've got something intensely flavorful to compare it to, you may not have as much natural interest in foods which are going to work for you rather than against you.
I don't know if you treat children and adolescents, but you know, you probably are well aware that a study was just released in the state of California, which points to, belatedly, because this information has been around since the Feingold diet in the 1960s, the relationship between attention deficit disorder and artificial food dyes. And many countries of the world have been ahead of the U.S. in banning these dyes. They're completely unnecessary. They're just a convenience to the food industry because there are many natural substitutes. So do you believe that there is such a linkage?
That is something that has been shown in studies going back a number of decades now, that food dyes did seem to be related to an increased risk of ADHD in children. What's another thing that's very interesting about the ADHD literature is that there have actually been some wonderful studies done with children. I don't treat children myself, but I do study all of the science between, you know, nutrition and different conditions. And there are some great studies out there showing that if you take children with ADHD, and some of them even quite severe ADHD, and you put them on what's called a few foods diet, which is, you know, just, you know, 7 or 8 different foods, mostly whole foods, you know, things like, you know, chicken and fruit, and you put them on a whole foods diet, what's called a few foods diet, mostly whole foods. It included also some things like rice and apple juice and margarine, but otherwise was, you know, looked kind of like a paleo diet. Within 2 to 3 weeks, there's something like a 2/3 to 3/4 response rate, meaning that these children improve significantly, and some of them no longer met criteria for ADHD at all within a very short period of time. Now, why is that? You know, what was it about because there were many, many changes, differences between that diet and what most kids eat. But it's just this really powerful argument that ADHD may not be, it may not be the destiny of these children. It may simply have been a reaction to how they were feeding their brains.
Wow. That's really profound. So In conclusion, let's give our listeners some resources. You have a website, and that's also where you offer your keto training for clinicians.
Yes, the website is called diagnosisdiet.com. And so I have articles there and lots of resources for people and also information about the training and consultations and things like that. But all the information on the site is free for everybody. That's one place where people can find me. I'm also on Twitter at Georgia Eat MD. And I do write periodically for Psychology Today. So a variety of different places you can find me.
And also you... in light of COVID, where people sometimes find it difficult to come in, or, you know, we have listeners all over the United States, is it possible to obtain online consultations with you?
It is. If you go to my website, there's a consultations tab on the website. I do have a wait list right now, but I'm working through it as fast as I can, and hope to have appointments coming up in May and in June. So I apologize for the wait, but please let me know if you're interested, and I will see you as soon as I can.
And that's dietdoctor.com?
Oh, yes. Yeah, so my website is Diagnosis Diet.
Oh, I'm sorry. Diagnosis.
That's okay. No, and I do contribute from time to time to the Diet Doctor website as well, which is an excellent website based in Sweden. Some of your listeners may know it's the largest low carb science and resource for low carb science and inspiration and information in the world, and it's everything is evidence based and balanced, and it's really, and most of the information on that site is free, including lots of inspirational videos and recipes, and just if anybody's interested in starting a low-carb diet, that's a great place to start, is that website, Diet Doctor.
Great. Okay, lots of resources for our listeners and for clinicians, and I want to congratulate you, Dr. Eid, on, you know, taking not the path of least resistance, but a rather innovative path towards getting your patients well. And you're going to be having a profound influence on a lot of people and on the profession. So keep up the great work. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very, very much. And really, it's all about empowering people to improve their own health and think differently about all these things. And I really thank you very much for your helping all of us get our messages out, and for, you know, being one of the pioneers in the field about thinking about our health differently. So it's been a real honor to be on your show. Thank you.
That's been my great pleasure. Thank you very much. That's Dr. Georgia Eid. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. As you know, this is a vital time to bolster our immune defenses. I've received countless requests for a specific list of supplements that I recommend to support immune health. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Immune Support Protocol, my supplement recommendations offering the greatest boost for your immune system when it's needed most. Best medicine is preventive medicine. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for more information. drhoffmanstore.com. In addition to the immune support protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links for our supplement starter kit, heart health protocol, and much more. These protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle. The same supplements I take for myself and prescribe for my patients. And for a limited time, you'll get free priority shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.